The Hagen Quartet are his artists of the week, and he's also joined each day by the explorer Benedict Allen, who'll be talking about his essential pieces of classical music. Breakfast at 6:30 and Essential Classics at 9, here on BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM on digital radio and online. It's 11 o'clock, time now for Jazz Lineup with Claire Martin.
Hello, that's the music of Jamaican-born saxophonist Joe Harriott, one of the key players from the landscape of the UK's jazz scene during the 1950s and 60s. And stay tuned for a profile on Joe Harriott's music later on in the show, in the company of author Alan Robertson. Also on today's show, concert music from this artist. The Canterbury-based trio of David Rees-Williams, and we'll be hearing more from them a little later on in the show. Plus, I'm pleased to say that I'm joined by journalist and fellow Jazz Lineup presenter Kevin Legendre, and we are taking a look ahead at some of the new exciting releases coming out in 2012. So, Kevin, what can we expect?
Three very different releases which give us a nice little cross-section of possible highlights for the year. So we've got Particle, the Neil Cowley Trio, and Gregory Porter.
Well, let's start things off with Gregory Porter. The Brooklyn-based singer's new single is called Be Good. He played the Jazz Voice concert at the London Jazz Festival last year and a late-night set at Ronnie's for Jazz on 3, and was a charming interviewee when we met late last year. So here he is with Be Good.
Be good is her name, and I sing my lion song and brush my mane. She would, and she could, so she pulled my lion's tail and caused me pain. Said lions are made for cages, just to look at in delight. You dare not let them walk around, 'cause they might just bite. She knows what she does when she dances round my cage and says her name. Be good, be good. Is her name. I trim my lion's claws and I cut my mane, and I would if I could, but that woman treats me the same. She to look at in delight. Dare not let them walk around, 'cause they might just bite. Does she know what she does when she dances around my cage? Be good is her. Trim my lion's claws and I cut my mane, and I would if I could, but be good treats me the same. She said lions are made for cages. Just a look out and delight. You dare not let them walk around, but they might just bite. Does she know what she does when she dances around my cage? She dances around my cage. Does she know? Does she know? Be good. Be good.
Gregory Porter and Be Good, his new single out now. Do you like that, Kevin?
Love it.
Big fan of his?
Massive fan. Hugely charismatic guy, as well as a very gifted singer. And also, I think, a great writer as well. Really good with lyrics.
Yeah, he really does seem to have it all. Do you think that this year, 2012, is going to be his year, I guess?
Very possibly. Certainly the momentum built up from the last release, if that keeps going, and I suppose he just does more and more high-profile gigs, then yeah, it could be very good.
Because he's been going quite a while. He deserves it. He's put the work in.
I think one of the reasons why he's so good is because he spent many years doing theatre. So his stage presence and his ease and his comfort on stage in front of an audience really comes through.
Well, good luck to him for this year, because he deserves all good things. And his new album is out on February the 13th. It's also titled Be Good. And you can be up close and see this charisma at the Pizza Express in Dean Street in Soho on the 12th and 13th of February. Well, now here's an early sneak preview of the new Troika album, Rarebit. It's out in March on Edition Records. But this track shows quite a square pusher, a.k.a. Tom Jenkins' influence on the trio, who combined jazz improvisation with rock dynamics and effects. Chris Montague is on guitar with Kit Downs on organ, and Joshua Blackmore is playing the drums. This is the title track, Rarebit. Thank you. Well, a taster from the trio Troika, whose second album will be released in March, and that was the track Rarebit. What did you think of that, Kevin?
I think it's even funkier than the stuff that they were doing on their first record. There's a very, very danceable, free-flowing energy there. And I also love the combination of sounds. It's quite rare to hear Hammond organ and piano. The range of sounds that they've got and that kind of funky driving momentum, yeah, the two things coming together, really works.
I really liked that. I'm going to play the rest of that, I think, to see if the whole album is as danceable. Well, that's from Troika, and of course you can get the new CD out in March. And we're recording Kit Downs in the company of two drummers, Seb Roachford and James Madron, at King's Place in London on February the 4th. And check out our website for more details of that concert. This is Jazz Lineup with me, Claire Martin, on BBC Radio 3, on FM, online and on digital radio. And I'm joined by Kevin Najomra, and together we're navigating through some of the exciting new releases out this year. We're next to talented emerging UK composer and arranger Tommy Evans. Here is Tommy and orchestra with a track from the Green Seagull Suite, and this is Per Mari Per Terram. Bye. second movement of the Green Seagull Suite, composed by Tommy Evans, who is also conducting Ruby Wood, Anna Stott, Carrie Nergard-Blevick, and they were on vocals. Simon Beddoe, Matt Roberts played trumpet and flugelhorn. Cy Kaler, Russ Henderson and Rob Mitchell were on saxes. Nick Tyson on guitar, Jamil Sheriff on piano, Dave Kane on bass, and Chris Wright on drums. That was recorded in January and February of last year. Well, also last year, we recorded them at the Scarborough Jazz Festival, Kevin, and you were there. What was your take on that concert?
It's very moving. I think that suite is actually inspired by Tommy Evans's uncle. So it's very personal, and the writing was very poignant. Mm. And at times it reminded me a little bit of either John Barry or the Cinematic Orchestra. I think Tommy claims the Cinematic Orchestra as an influence. So it's very, very atmospheric, very expressive.
The voices are lovely, aren't they? Those three singers really making it quite haunting at times,
yeah.
I thought. And unusual to hear them weaving in and out. I'm glad that he's using voices in this context.
Using them really as an instrument,
yeah.
And using them for textures as well as for words. So, yeah, it's a very beautiful piece of work.
So remember, Jazz Line, it will bring you highlights of Tommy's music, the Green Seagull Suite, recorded at Scarborough 2011 over the coming months. Our next choice is the new release by pianist Neil Cowley. Neil has begun a love affair with orchestration and has spent the last year writing, recording and arranging specifically for trio and strings. The new album, called The Face of Mount Molehill, is released on the 23rd of January on the Name Jazz label, and the album features contributions from Brian Eno's collaborator, producer and guitarist Leo Abrahams. Let's hear Distance by Clockwork.
Thank you.
From the new CD, The Face of Mount Molehill, that was Distance by Clockwork by Neil Cowley. And on the 15th of March, the Neil Cowley Trio play with a specially selected ensemble of string players, the Mount Molehill Strings, at the Queen Elizabeth Hall at London's South Bank Centre. Now, Kevin, you heard this album. What do you think?
I think it's very beautiful in places, and I think, unfortunately, at times, it's underwritten. I think he's made a deliberate attempt to move away from something which is improv-heavy and which has loads of solos, which is absolutely fine. But every so often, it feels as if a track could have a bit more to it melodically, and that there could be more parts and maybe another interlude or just another harmony, something else going on. So at times, to me, it feels as if it's a little bit undercooked. But then again, there are some very beautiful moments as well.
Do you think you might expand that in a live setting at the South Bank?
I mean, I hope
perhaps
so.
There'll be more of exactly what you just said.
I mean, that's the thing about jazz when it's really working. Things can come alive and you can have that extra on stage.
Sure.
And the studio, as you know, can be a bit cold and forbidding. So fingers crossed, it will really reach another level when they do it on stage.
Well, as I said earlier, on the 15th of March, Neil will be playing with the string players at the Queen Elizabeth Hall at London's South Bank Centre, and you can go and see them, perhaps improvise on the theme, or indeed get the album and make your own mind up. So, Kevin, let's talk about the next track, Particle.
It really, really knocked me out, this album, when it arrived. I must admit, I hadn't heard of them before. They put out a debut album, I think, in 2010. And this arrived. This is a trio with Duncan Eagles on tenor and soprano sax, Max Luther on double bass, and Eric Ford on drums and percussion. And I thought that there was a real lyricism to what they were doing, that some of the themes that are played throughout are really, really beautiful, not just on the sax, but on the bass as well. I particularly like that, the fact that the bass and the drums are not just in the background. There are times when the sax is playing a rhythmic role and you really feel that the drummer is there driving things. The other thing which is really important is the fact that you've got drums and percussion. As you'll hear in this track, the percussion is very, very central to what they do, and it gives an extra sort of added rhythmic layer. And to me, it's in the lineage of some of those great trio albums by the likes of Joe Henderson, and other players as well. It's a very strong release.
They've spent the last 18 months writing and getting this together, so it actually makes sense that it does sound so sort of linked, and the synergy is there with all the instruments playing an important part.
Well, cohesion is the appropriate term. It feels like a proper lived-in band.
It's a long time to write, isn't it, 18 months?
Yeah, and I really respect them for that. I think that when you have music which is given that incubation period, where it can just grow and people will go back to themes, maybe play them a different way, maybe take stuff out, put extra things in. So you've got that constant kind of fine-tuning and you end up with you end up with something which really feels fully formed, which to me, this is what this record is.
Well, the record's called Cohesion and they are Particle. Let's hear Blood of the Pharaoh. Thank you. From their second album, Cohesion, that was the track Blood of the Pharaoh, written by saxophonist Duncan Eagles. And Particle R, Eric Ford on drums, Max Luthert on double bass, and Duncan Eagles on tenor and soprano saxophones. If you'd like to go and see Particle launching their record, on the 1st of February they're in Sheffield. The 3rd of February they're at Bradford Jazz Club. And on the 15th of February at 7:30 they're at the 606 Club in London. And that's the launch of this album. Well, next up, a very special session track featuring vocalist Leanne Carroll and pianist Brian Kellock. Originally broadcast on BBC Radio Scotland's Jazz House programme, and it was recorded at BBC Scotland's Pacific Key Studios in Glasgow on December the 21st, 2011. Here's Brian and Leanne's version of George and Ira Gershwin's Embraceable You.
Embrace me, my sweet, embraceable you. Embrace me, my irreplaceable you. I just wonder at you, my hagu tipsy in me. Above all, I want my arms about you. So, don't you be annoyed, baby. You can't more do my sweet embrace of you.
The exquisite Leanne Carroll on vocals and, of course, Brian Kellock accompanying her on piano. That was the track Embraceable You by George and Ira Gershwin. And that track gifted to Jazz Lineup by BBC Radio Scotland's Jazz House programme. And if you want to find out more about that show, check out the link on the Jazz Lineup page. Well, next up, Kevin, an interview you conducted with the author of Fire in My Soul, which is the book profiling the Jamaican-born sax giant Joe Harriott. Tell us a little bit about Joe Harriott.
Well, in a word, he made music that was ahead of its time, which is why we're still talking about him almost 30 years after he died. He was initially influenced by Charlie Parker, but he moved towards a form of abstract composition, which would loosely be called avant-garde. It's very, very expressive, using sound as well as set phrases and chord sequences. Very impressionistic. I suppose that's the best way to describe it.
Well, before we hear the interview with the author, Alan Robertson, let's hear some classic Joe Harriott from the recently released box set on Proper Records. From the Joe Harriott story, this is the track Cherokee. That's a bebop standard, Kevin. Perhaps that's what you mean by his roots being in that
his
idiom.
Roots were in bop, and if you were a serious bop player, then you had to be able to play this tune, and as you can hear, he does beautifully. That was Cherokee by the Joe Harriott Quartet, featured on a fantastic four-disc box set issued by Proper Records called The Joe Harriott Story, which coincides with the release of an absolutely brilliant book, a biography of this fantastic musician called Fire in His Soul by Alan Robertson. And Alan is here. Hello.
Hi there.
Firstly, Alan, this is the second edition, the revised edition of this book, which came out in 2003. So it's great it's back with us again. The general consensus would say is a very, very significant figure in the history of UK jazz. Could you sum up for us why?
What I would stress about what makes Joe so special is that he had the courage to explore areas that no one else based in Europe had certainly explored before. And he did so at a time when Ornette Coleman was finding his own way into free jazz. Joe has his own personal take on it and produced music of extremely high calibre. He did so with some fabulous musicians. Joe, being such a virtuoso on saxophone, was able to command the respect of anyone playing jazz in Britain at that time. And accordingly, he was able to select the very best musicians to form his quintet when he decided to form that in 1958.
Okay, so we're going right back to the late 50s and the early 60s, which we will discuss in detail in just a moment. Before we get into the Joe Harriott story in earnest, this brilliant Jamaican musician, which is important to stress, mm-hmm. who came to London in the early 50s, tell me about when your passion for his work and your desire to write a book first came about.
I happen to have been born 1951, the year Joe first travelled to Britain.
That's a good sign, isn't it?
I think so. I think it was meant to happen. It so happened that I heard of Joe when I was about 16. His name was in context of world jazz then, because he was playing with John Mayer, and they called it a double quartet. Mm. Joe's jazz quintet played with John Mayer's quintet, who were...
He was the great Indian violinist
fabulous,
and composer, yeah.
Fabulous talent.
Yeah.
Sadly, no longer with us. And he and Joe collaborated to produce this real hybrid music. I mean, it was so exciting for me because I was taken down the road, I suppose, towards Indian music by the Beatles, other rock musicians who, I suppose, pushed the likes of Joe and others out of places like the Flamingo Club and the Marquee. But they had introduced this Indian music to Western rock music. I really liked the jazz-Indian music combination. And so I grew up remembering this great, great music as Joe's name faded from the scene. I grew more and more involved in jazz and developed a real taste for it and read Ian Carr's book, Music Outside, about contemporary British jazz and what a struggle it was for people to make a living in the medium. And he mentioned Joe in just a passing few sentences as one of the tragic figures who only survived into his early 40s. He mentioned Joe and Phil Seaman, who was incidentally Joe's drummer.
Also died young as well.
Yes. Yeah. He said Phil had died largely as a result of long-term drug addiction, but that Joe had been worn down by an unappreciative establishment and generally just found it too much of a struggle to try and make ends meet. And despite having this brilliant jazz quintet, I knew nothing of the music prior to Indo Jazz Fusion, so I set out to buy these discs, specifically the free jazz, which Ian Carr had so lauded. And, of course, they weren't available until 1998. And when I got them, I was blown away. I just thought this is one of the most exciting discoveries I've ever made. I thought the music was as fresh to my ears in 1998 as it could have been in 1960 when it first appeared.
I think that's a very, very important point in itself, because Freeform and Abstracts, these two records which mm-hmm. are largely acknowledged as Joe Harriott's masterworks, along with Indo Jazz Suite and Indo Jazz Fusions, yep. the collaborations with John Mayer, they were largely out of print for many years.
Yep.
And I think that really reflects the lack of appreciation that there was for British jazz. I mean, it took until 1998, I remember it well,
yep.
when those records were issued on CD. And one of the things that a lot of journalists and a lot of people in the British jazz community said was, why did it take so long?
Exactly.
So if we go back to the late 90s,
sure.
say 1998, when I think it was the Redial series was launched and
yep.
these records were issued on CD for the first time, and there was a kind of burst of interest in Joe Harriott. I remember writing about him for The Independent at the time. Other people were also writing about him. Did you feel that there was a kind of momentum that was building that you could take a bit further by doing, I suppose, the very important thing that nobody had done before, which was to write a book about him, to actually do his biography?
The prime reason I wrote the book wasn't ever to make a great amount of money, because it hasn't.
I would have thought so.
You could imagine writing about someone who's been
yeah.
dead for such a long time and died of neglect, according to some. It wasn't exactly going to be a bestseller. But I wanted my book to contribute. I didn't think it would do it on its own, but I wanted it to contribute to a growing appreciation of what
yeah.
Joe was about. And it possibly has. The signs I see, I received word just very recently that Open University students are going to have access to a DVD called Kind of Red, White and Blue, which is a clever title.
Yes.
And it's, and you may have heard of it, but it's about the black jazz musicians in Britain and their contribution to jazz. And I love the idea that Open University students will be listening and watching the very rare film footage of Joe playing when he plays in a sentimental mood, the only remaining footage of Joe playing.
So that's certainly whetted my appetite to listen to a bit more of Joe Harriet's music. So let's go back to the proper box set now. This absolutely rip-roaring version of Caravan by the Joe Harriet Quintet featuring Frank Holder on bongos. This is Caravan. Caravan by the Joe Harriet Quintet featuring Frank Holder on bongos from the proper box set, The Joe Harriet Story. I'm joined by Alan Robertson, author of Fire in His Soul. Alan, as we could hear on that track, Joe Harriet certainly had this fiery, explosive quality in his alto sax playing. Do you make reference to that, or is the title inspired by that, Fire in His Soul? Is that a reference to that side of his character?
Absolutely. When I heard his playing, I could hear this distinctive voice, this individual sound that great sax players all have. You can hear the excitement and the raw passion in a lot of Joe's music. It just comes across so strongly. And I was looking for a title. I didn't want to just call the book Joe Harriet.
Yeah.
And the fieriness in his playing suggested to me that that came right from the very heart of the man. And the more I've read about Joe and the more recent information I've come across about Joe has convinced me that there was this burning passion in the man.
Because he was a highly complex character, wasn't he?
Extremely.
A lot of people didn't find particularly endearing. He could be moody, he could be difficult to communicate with. Yeah, I think certainly from reading your book and from reading Coleridge Good's book as well, Coleridge Good, the bass player in many of his bands, who played with him a lot, I think they all agree that there was this intensity and this vision, this sense of vision, which he followed through with enormous resolve. If we can just paint a little bit of a picture of Joe Harriott arriving in London in the early 50s. He came from Jamaica. He attended the famous Alpha School for Boys, this sort of legendary orphanage run by Catholic nuns in Kingston, which also had various members of the Scatterlites attending and having music lessons and going on to do illustrious things in Jamaican music. And then he came to London in the early 50s. And he formed his own group after playing with the likes of Tony Kinsey and Ronnie Scott. But I suppose the really incredible thing is the fact that he was in the vanguard of musicians who had multicultural groups in the 50s and the 60s. You had Pat Smythe from Scotland on piano, Coleridge Good from Jamaica on bass, Phil Seaman from England on drums, and Shake Keen, this other amazing Caribbean musician on trumpet and flugelhorn. So it's a multicultural group in the early 50s. It certainly created a very, very strong chemistry. I mean, if we go to the heart of the matter, I suppose, which is Joe Harriott actually recording this incredible album called Freeform in 1960, which to a large extent helps to usher in the avant-garde in Europe. Tell us a bit more about Freeform, Alan.
Well, Freeform, I suppose, was the beginning of Joe's greatest achievement, which was his development of free jazz, abstract jazz, as sometimes he referred to it. It meant the end of his standard bebop quintet, because Hank Shaw and Harry South certainly didn't want to play that kind of music. Harry was a writer, arranger, and he could see no future for his own talents within the freeform development. So they left. And Joe brought in Shake Keane, who was a fabulously gifted trumpeter and flugelhorn player. And he found Phil Seaman available. Phil wasn't always available because he was in such great demand by others. Phil Seaman on drums. And, of course, Coleridge Good, Joe's longest-term collaborator, was willing to embrace freeform after being a part of so many different types of music, including swing. And he just had such an open mind and embraced the new music as would any young, enthusiastic student out of music college. You know, fabulous approach.
So this is moving away from set chord sequences and time signatures. This is having very short, almost micro themes within the music, and then very open passages. So as Joe Harriott himself said, it's akin to painting, and he always drew parallels between his music and visual art, certainly in the freeform period.
Yes, the love that Joe had for Paul Klee, Picasso, and writers also. I mean, great poets, and you know, Joe would have been such a great intellectual given a more academic education. Joe had a great mind that unfortunately wasn't developed in the formative years the way maybe it could have been. But he turned that to advantage by becoming such a fantastic musician.
I was about to say, you certainly hear it in the depth and the complexity of freeform.
Yep.
So I think we should listen to a track from that. We're going to hear the track Impression. And Alan, you're also going to read from Fire in His Soul, describing the abstract music of Joe Harriott and the kind of freeform period that he went into in the early 60s. So this is Impression by the Joe Harriott Quintet, with a reading from Alan Robertson as well.
Thank you.
The Harriet Quintet's first abstract LP, Freeform, came out on the Jazzland label, with the title modishly printed in lowercase. The sleeve design was by Ken Dierdoff, whose work had previously appeared on Bill Evans' classic Riverside albums. The front pictured a sculpture in monochrome, showing a wooden frame supporting varied objects. These included a cast-iron mechanical money bank, with an arm designed to feed pennies into the gaping mouth of its black face. A peculiar reference indeed. The reverse side was very different, with black, seemingly random brush strokes, suggesting the work of a demented Japanese calligrapher. The apparently random nature of both pieces of cover art was presumably meant to suggest similar trends in the music. In the constantly changing and shifting world of jazz, experimentation is a necessity, not a luxury, claimed the sleeve note. Not all attempted change takes root and becomes part of the living fabric of jazz, but without the bold adventurers, there would, in time, be very little besides stagnation. Harriet was quoted, "If there can be abstract painting, why not abstract music? There is a dividing line in my mind about what we are doing, but I think the best way of expressing this is to say that while it has form, while the themes are structural, our approach to it is abstract. We make no use at all of bar lines, and there is no set harmony or series of chords, but there is an interplay of musical form, and we do keep a steady four in the rhythm section."
That was the brilliant impression. I mean, I've listened to that piece of music a lot over the years, but any time I hear it, it still takes me off to some place in the clouds where there are all these different colours and shades and meanings and all sorts. It's just brilliant. Joe Harriet impression from the album Freeform. So we've got one last piece that we can listen to, which is called The Rake. It just remains for me to give a big thank you to Alan Robertson. It's been a pleasure talking to you. I mean, this book has certainly been instructive to me in many ways. Joe Harriet, Fire in His Soul by Alan Robertson, published by Northway. The new revised edition available again. And the box set, which is four discs of glorious Joe Harriet music on Proper Records, that's available as well. So, Alan, thank you very much once again.
Thank you.
And this is one last piece from Joe Harriet. This is called The Rake.
The Rake by Joe Harriet, and thanks to Alan Robertson for those insights into the music of Joe Harriet. This is Jazz Lineup with me, Claire Martin, on BBC Radio 3, on FM, online and on digital radio. Well, next we've got concert music from pianist and organist David Rees-Williams and his trio recorded at the 2011 Scarborough Jazz Festival. As I mentioned before, Kevin Legendre was at the Scarborough Jazz Festival. Memories of that performance, Kevin?
Very good, considering the fact that he was a last-minute replacement to Jacques Lussier, who unfortunately had to pull out due to illness.
Mm.
And I thought that he did really well, and he put a lot into the gig. It was very high energy in places. And I think at one point he actually did Lussier's famous version of Air on a G-string as a tribute to him. So he kind of acknowledged his influence,
yes,
which was nice.
Yeah, that's nice. So let's hear David Rees-Williams' trio recorded at the Grand Hall of the Spa as part of the 2011 Scarborough Jazz Festival. The music sees David and his band explore classical repertoire in a jazz setting. The band open with an improvisation based around Handel's Passacaglia, Suite number 7, G minor keyboard suite, and David Rees-Williams plays piano and Hammond, Neil Francis is on the bass, and Phil Laslett plays the drums.
We'd like to continue with a wonderful invention by Henry Purcell. And I use the word invention because he uses a very, very well-worn musical gadget called ground bass, recurring bass part. And this is a fabulous tune, and it's very appropriate for this gathering tonight. It's called Music for a While.
David Rees-Williams Trio playing Music for a While by Purcell, and before that you heard Passacaglia, which is an improvisation based around the Handel piece. That was recorded at 2011 Scarborough Jazz Festival, and David Rees-Williams played piano and Hammond, Neil Francis on bass, and Phil Laslett played the drums. Well, that's almost all from today's show. Plenty more jazz on BBC Radio 3 with Jazz on 3 with Jez Nelson on Monday nights at 11. This week, Jez presents Romanian pianist Lucian Ban in concert with his octet, recorded at the 2011 London Jazz Festival. And on next week's jazz lineup, previously unbroadcast concert music from pianist McCoy Tyner, plus an interview with saxophonist Chris Potter, recorded at the 2011 London Jazz Festival. My thanks to Kevin Legendre for selecting some picks for 2012. It's going to be a very exciting year for jazz, don't we think?
Absolutely. There's some great stuff coming.
Some great stuff coming out, and also some of the masters coming over to the UK. In fact, we've got a hot date to go and see Mark Murphy on the 31st of this month at Ronnie Scott's, haven't we?
Can't wait for that.
Well, to end today's show, another new release, and indeed another early preview of a CD out in March. It's by the jazz fusion supergroup Blue Touch Paper. They released their debut album on the 13th of May on Provocateur Records. Colin Towns plays the keyboards, Chris Montague is on guitar, Eben McLean is on bass, Benny Greb is on drums, Stefan Mass on percussion, and Mark Lockhart playing the saxes. This is One Eye on the Clock. Until next time, from me, Claire Martin, bye-bye.